A lot of us mistakenly believe that self-worth lives in the mind. Like if you just think, I'm a worthy woman, I am enough, you'll instantly believe it. But if you've ever tried to think your way into confidence, self-esteem, or self-worth, you know that that feeling doesn't always last. That's why Bea Victoria Albina is here to talk to us about why and how self-worth starts in the body.
The body.
I didn't have to say body, but... can you really help yourself from saying bade? I can't. Bea Victoria Albina might have a familiar name because she's been on Mary's Cup of Tea before. A couple years back, she talked about people-pleasing and perfectionism, and now she's back.
Back again.
Bea's back to talk to us about how to end emotional outsourcing, which is also the title of her new book. Emotional outsourcing, you will learn about it in this podcast, so I'm not going to explain it to you, but the TLDR version, the too long didn't read version, is acquiring your self-worth from other people, from external forces, your achievements, your work, your relationships. That kind of emotional outsourcing inhibits our self-worth. So today you'll hear about how emotional outsourcing differs from codependency or perhaps anxious, avoidant attachment styles. We unpack a lot of that. Bea also teaches us how to break free from the self-abandonment cycle, stop people-pleasing, and of course approach all of this work with self-compassion. In case you're unfamiliar with Beatriz Victoria Albina, she is a UCSF-trained nurse practitioner, somatic experiencing practitioner, master-certified somatic life coach, author of End Emotional Outsourcing, A Guide to Overcoming Codependent, Perfectionist, and People-Pleasing Habits. She has a passion for helping humans socialized as women to reconnect with their bodies, regulate their nervous systems, and rewire their minds so they can break free from codependency, perfectionism, and people-pleasing. She's the host of Feminist Wellness Podcast, holds a master's degree in public health from Boston University School of Public Health, and a BA in Latin American Studies from Oberlin College. Born in Mar de la Plata, Argentina, Bea grew up in the great state of Rhode Island. She has been working in health and wellness for over 20 years and lives with her wife, Billy Albina, and their handsome all-black cat, Wade, who you'll hear about in this podcast. You can get Bea's book, End Emotional Outsourcing, as well as her free meditation guide, linked for you both in the description. If you'd like to hear my previous two episodes with Bea, one about people-pleasing, the other is about perfectionism, I'll link those for you in the description as well. And now, without further ado, let's hear from Bea Victoria Albina on why and how self-worth starts in the body and how to stop emotionally outsourcing. Hi, Bea. Welcome to Mary's Cup of Tea.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Well, welcome back, I should say, because this is your second time on, which is so exciting and such an honor.
I am the luckiest gal that I get to spend even more time with you. And thanks for having me back on your phenomenal show.
To start off, I have been asking guests, what's your proverbial cup of tea lately?
Well, my actual cup of tea is mate, because I'm Argentine, and it's like an appendage. Like, I just drink mate all day long. But I am obsessed with my cat. And I don't use the word obsessed like in like the way everyone's like, oh my God, I'm obsessed with that. But this young man has been living with us for about 6 months now. My nephew found him in the garbage and like literally. And he is just, he can do no wrong in my eyes, Mary. Like everything he does is perfect. And he's obsessed with shadows. So he'll like come up to you and he'll go, meow, which is him demanding shadows, and you'd like wave your hand on the wall and he jumps and like catches the shadows, but he knows we're making them. It's wild. I talked to a vet who was like, that's weird, but fine. Anyway, he's my cup of tea. He's my everything right now.
That's a very advanced feline. Demands a shadow.
Why, thank you.
Do you have like a flashlight that you do like little shadow animals?
I have indeed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What color is he?
Oh, he's all black. Ooh. Which is perfect for two very witchy. We're both very witchy in this house. Yeah, he's pitch black. And because he's from the garbage, he didn't understand cuddling. And so it's been this process of him like getting closer to cuddling. And we've had three cuddles now. Who's keeping track? I am. I definitely write it down. It's magical. And he's going to be a lap cat someday.
He's growing from an avoidant to an affectionate.
It's true. His attachment wounds are healing.
Shifting gears into the topic of today's episode, which is how self-worth starts in the body, body, yaddy, yaddy, yaddy. And the title of your book is called End Emotional Outsourcing. So when did you personally start to realize that you were emotionally outsourcing, and perhaps we should define what that means as you talk about it.
Yeah, so emotional outsourcing is the term I created as an umbrella term for our codependent, perfectionist, and people-pleasing habits because, well, I didn't like any of those terms. Like, none of them felt like they really explained what I was living through, or my friends were living through, my patients, my clients, and they all had this sort of air of like blame and shame and choicefulness that I think is really problematic. And I can get into a lot more about that if you'd like. So I knew we needed a new term because I was talking with so many friends who similarly had all sorts of habits we'd call codependent. And we're also like, but what's that word? It's pathologizing. It's just kind of like means something yucky, but means nothing at the same time. And so I sat down, like a gal will do, and sort of made the Venn diagram of those three habits. And in the middle is emotional outsourcing, which is when we chronically and habitually source our sense of the three vital human needs, safety, belonging, and worth, from everyone and everything outside of ourselves instead of from within, at a great cost to self. And I'll just pause there because it's a lot to take in. What really for me is at the core of that is really living outside of intention, right? Really living from this habit, from what nerds would call implicit memory or procedural memory in the body. Procedural memory is like, you know how you don't have to think about driving a car or like riding a bike or, I don't know, how to open your phone? You just have that memory written into your body. The same thing happens around emotional outsourcing. Let's say you make your husband this beautiful meal and you're really excited and like you set the table, it's this gorgeous thing and you don't know that the day he's had. And he comes home and he's grumpy and he doesn't want to talk and he goes right to your room or the bathroom or whatever. And your body reads that with an old script. You project an old script from childhood onto that. And you assume he's mad at you, he hates you, you failed, right? This whole story starts from that procedural memory. And then what happens in the body? Your belly hurts, your shoulders slump, your eyes hurt, you start crying, right? This cascade of experience happens that creates your life based not fully on the moment in front of you, but all the moments from your life before getting projected onto this one moment. Our bodies at some point in childhood or our teen years or our 20s learned that being our authentic self, being our true self was not the smartest and bestest choice. And so we put self at the back of the cave and we play acted. We showed up as whoever we think people want us to be. You want an A+, straight A, good girl, gold star, perfection? Absolutely. Let me perform that for you. You want the loving, doting martyr? Absolutely. Let me perform that for you. And we step into all of these roles and forget ourselves. And so when I say that it's written in the body, that's what I mean.
It makes me think of an experience I had a couple of days ago where I was putting so much pressure on myself, specifically around, I think by the time this goes live, some of my listeners might know what I'm talking about, but essentially I got like the dream brand deal of my life with BFF by Bumble. And that was really exciting because I've actually been on that app for many months. I've met some great girls and they wanted me to like make a come with me on a friend date video. So I was like, I'm not going to lie to my audience. Like, this is going to be a real first date. Now I have to simultaneously meet a new person who I genuinely like, but also grab some content from it. It was just like a big contract. And I remember coming home from that friend date, which, mind you, went extraordinarily well. Like, she was such a sweet girl. She texted me after, we're going to see each other again. It feels like dating, but in a best way possible because it's for the girls. But I walked through the door and my husband was like, how'd it go? You know, he knew how nervous I was leading up to it. Like, I was just a mess. And a part of me was like, do I ask an existing friend to like act it out so that way I can be more comfortable? But then I'm like, I cannot lie to my followers. Like, this has to be the real thing. So again, so much pressure on myself. And I physically, I thought about this because you were explaining like the things our body does. I physically like walked into the kitchen. We have like a little couch back that I kind of leaned up against, and I just sunk to the ground. Like very, I felt like I just physically and metaphorically like kind of crippled under all the pressure, especially after it was over. And I was like, okay, like I did it. Now I have to do all the post-production, the editing, the submitting, like, et cetera. But the anticipation leading up to it, and the realization that I think you would probably say I was emotionally outsourcing 100%. And so the words I told him, this is my long-winded way, is I told my husband, I said, you know, up until my 20s, like basically up until I met you, I met him at 21, I was living my life from the male gaze. It was like, what do the men think of me? And now there was this moment where I was like, I'm living for this, like, kind of, it felt like a social media gaze, you know what I mean? Where it's constantly, it's like not even my own experience. So when I read bits and pieces of your book, I was like, oh, this is what's been really weighing on me lately.
It's emotional outsourcing. Everyone else's opinion matters more than Mary's. And where does that leave you at the end of the day? Especially when the things we're taught, particularly when you're socialized as a girl and a woman, we're taught to value the things that change and go away. Like your 18-year-old figure, right? Your weight will change in life. That's how it works. Your hair color, your skin texture, your romantic relationships, your friendships, your career, your being a mom or not. Like, these things change. But we're told to put our whole identity into them and into what others think about them. So then who are we when others don't like those expressions and when those things change? It really F's with us, right? When we carry the same mindset story and we carry the same story somatically in our body, we can project it onto 1,000 different places. And so, because a lot of people will say to me, well, I can't be codependent because like I didn't grow up with an alcoholic, or I didn't have trauma growing up, or right, all these myths we've heard. And I think you share so beautifully growing up focused on the male gaze, outsourcing to men, and then outsourcing to the social media gaze, which is also the work gaze, right? And so we can have emotional outsourcing with our career, with our parents, with our kids, with our friends, with our romantic partner, with our neighbor, with a stranger on the street, right? Because it's about us and how we carry ourselves. It's not actually about anyone else.
And it becomes especially apparent when your like physical body reflects that. That's why I love, you know, pointing out how self-worth starts in the body. I'm wondering if you had a particular moment like that, or when you first started feminist wellness, like how, I know you drew the Venn diagram, but like what was leading up to that Venn diagram?
Oh, so much. When I was, God, was I in my early 30s, my then best friend said that she was like, girl, you know, you're really codependent, right? And I was like, no. Wait, what does that mean? And I don't think she could even sort of like define it, because what even is it? But I tried going to like the 12-step groups and doing that kind of work, because I was in romantic relationships where her joy, her pleasure, her preferences, her wants, her needs were like my entire world, right? And if someone was disappointed with me, oof, right? Like everything would crumble. Like I was so deeply entrenched in all of these habits and was living from so much anxious attachment, which of course the flip of that was also living in so much avoidant attachment, right? My nervous system was so deeply dysregulated, especially when it came to romantic relationships in my case. But again, I later saw it in work, right? That I was overworking and overfunctioning and overdoing and over, like taking overly too much responsibility. But again, that the terms we have felt so blamey and so shamey, and talked so much about how I had to identify with the term, right? Because you have to be a codependent, which like, no, thank you. I was living out every part of these terms, but couldn't really get the help I needed because I also, I couldn't identify with it, but like, boy, was I doing it.
Thank you for finding us a new term. And I especially love that it's a verb. Like, we're emotionally outsourcing as like an action, a habit almost. We're not emotional outsourcers like a lot of people in the codependent community would be like, I'm a codependent. That's not really an action. So maybe the outsourcing is the action associated with it.
Yeah, it's a thing you're doing because it's a brilliant survival skill. And that's what I really wanted to point us towards, right? That it's not something we're born with, and our lives don't have to be about anyone else and their dysfunction. It's really about us and our brilliance. I mean, because when you think about it, like a six-year-old who's like, okay, listen, everyone in this house has a lousy evening if mom comes home upset from work and I don't play the jester or I don't show her my A+ on my spelling test. There are things I can do to manage her mood so she's nicer to dad, so she's nicer to my siblings, so that everyone has a better day. Like, that's not a defective kid. That's a friggin' brilliant kid. Right, Mary? Like, what a smart little peanut. There's so much shame that comes when we are mean to ourselves about these habits, and shame keeps us in this self-abandonment cycle. Meanwhile, recognizing our own genius lifts us up out of that cycle and into a place where we can actually be compassionate with ourselves and can create real change.
Mm. I love that as a starting point. Like, it's a brilliant survival strategy. You often talk about how healing starts with safety, which I believe was one of your three circles from this Venn diagram, right?
Yes. Safety, belonging, and worth. Yeah. Yeah. But safety undergirds it all, right?
What does that mean? What does that feel like in the body when we start to believe that we belong, that we're worthy, that we're safe where we are?
Yeah. Well, it feels like unclenching. So often when we talk about a feeling is in the body, we're talking about a tension pattern, right? We're talking about a habitual way of holding ourselves against the world. I'd like to think of like a boxer in the ring. Like, you're always tense, like your arms are always squeezing into your chest, like waiting for the next proverbial shoe to drop. Like, you're always walking on eggshells when you're living in emotional outsourcing. And so when we step into safety, belonging, and worth, our shoulders drop without being told to. Our breath moves deeper into the belly, the jaw can soften, right? So it's not fireworks. It's like this quiet miracle of your body deciding it no longer has to brace for impact, just to exist, just to move through the day, just to be you. And so what that looks like is we start to function more authentically, which means we start sharing the truth of what we want, need, and feel. And want, need, and feel, not available in emotional outsourcing, right? What's available is, oh, we can go anywhere you want for dinner. Yeah, no, we can go anywhere you want for vacation. We can do anything you want, right? I'm not taking responsibility for it, because what if it's wrong? What if it's bad? What if you don't like it and then you're mad at me? Forget about it. You want pizza? We have pizza. You want sushi? We have sushi. You want burgers? I don't care. What matters is that I can anticipate and manage your feelings, because I can't deal with you having big feelings. So when we step into more safety, we learn how to have comfort with, or maybe we start with less discomfort with, our own feelings and allowing other people to have theirs. Right? And so we then don't need to manage and micromanage everything in the world, because we start to believe and trust that our spouses, our parents, our kids, our friends, our siblings, they can have feelings. And that's okay. And it's a lot of work to get there. I don't want to sound flippant, you know, but that's the work, is allowing others to have their feelings, honoring our own. And more than anything, finding that safety means being present in the moment, right? So you're able to pause, be intentional, and be responsive, and not just like not a cat clawing back, right? You're not reacting to life. You're making adult choices and really speaking from emotional intelligence and emotional maturity.
You're not the cat living in the dumpster anymore.
My poor Wade. My poor good boy. Okay, by the way, my nephew is a 19-year-old white boy. So his name is Wade Wilson, like Deadpool. And his brother, he was found with a brother whose name is Peter Parker.
Perfect. I especially love that for you specifically.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's pretty funny, right? But yeah, we don't have to be the garbage cat. We can be the snuggle cat. And we can be the cat. You know, Wade is the most amazing teacher because he's like, I'll reach my hand out and he tells me if he wants to be pet or not. And I don't think he gives a flaming F how I feel about whether he wants to be pet. My feelings about whether he wants to be touched, that's not his business. His business is clearly communicating and he either rubs up on me or he walks away. So that's what finding that safety in our bodies allows, is for us to say pet me or don't.
Mm-hmm. For me personally, that story I told where I like sunk under my cloak of shame and just like crippled down to the cold kitchen floor. Afterward, I felt a sense of relief because, well, I was home. I was talking to my husband. He never tries to change the experience at all. I love that I can talk to him authentically, even about like the male gaze. Like, he's probably like, what's that? And should I be jealous? But he knows, you know, not to be, I guess, at this point. Anyway, so as I was like sinking deeper and deeper into the floor and like gravity was holding me, like you said, my nervous system kind of like relaxed. And then suddenly I'm like full spread out, spread eagle, starfishing this kitchen floor. And for me, that felt like safety. That felt like self-worth. That felt like I'm home. Something, even just the tile is holding me and my husband's presence and everything. So as you were talking through that experience, I was like, oh, I went through like the phases. I went from like realizing that I've been emotionally outsourcing for the days leading up to the brand deal to kind of like getting it off my chest with the admittal that I was doing so in the first place. I guess they say it like starts with awareness or whatever. Isn't it so annoying when the Buddhist monks are right?
So annoying. I married a Buddhist. It's so annoying. Yeah. I'm like, okay, equanimity would be helpful. How about you hush it? Fine. Jerks.
Seriously. They think they're so just rude. Better than everyone.
Right?
Or maybe it's that I think that they think that they're better than everyone.
Yeah, they know they have no self. But whatever. Still rude.
Hey, self-lover. Sorry to interrupt, but do you have my self-love playlist? There's over 300, if not 400 songs on it that are so fun and uplifting and empowering, and I think will really be perfect for when you're getting ready, trying to hype yourself up, dealing with a bad body image day, or anytime you just want a little boost of self-love, these tracks will do it for you. So head to maryscupoftea.com/playlist to get it and know that I am dancing and jamming with you from afar. Cheers.
Could you, I want people to read your book. So maybe you could tease it. You don't have to go into like the full depth and breadth, but could you talk about those other two circles in the Venn diagram? So after we go through safety and the healing, starting with safety, how else can we end emotional outsourcing?
Yeah. So the two big frameworks that I propose in the book, this whole second half is the remedies. We talk about mindset work, and I introduced the thought work protocol that I created based on cognitive behavioral theory, some Stoics, some Buddhism, where we really start to ask ourselves, what is my interpretation of this moment? So I offer a tool that allows us in these five steps to start to really understand what's actually happening in the moment in front of us. What is the actual court admissible facts of this moment? And what's my story? And there's usually like a gulf between them, right? Because our story is a whole lifetime of hurts and joys and stories and values and traumas and everything being projected onto one moment of time because we're human. And so in the thought work protocol, we then start to understand that the thought you're choosing, the story you're telling about any given moment, is in its way a choice. And you get to slowly but surely, and it's a whole process, right? You get to recognize the thoughts you're bringing into the moment, decide if you want to keep having that thought, if it serves you, And if not, I give you a whole bunch of tools to start to change those thoughts so that you can decide how you want to experience life, understanding that our thoughts create our feelings and our feelings are fuel for so much action, right? And that action creates our life. So that's one framework that I share in a ton of detail in the book. And then I really frame that and couch that in somatics, in the nervous system. I've been studying the nervous system and somatics for 20 years now, which is bananas that I've been doing anything that long, but here we are. And we really need to understand, I'm going to say something very nerdy, story follows state in the nervous system. What that means is that the state your nervous system is in dictates the thoughts that are available to you. Meaning, let's say you're at the top of a roller coaster. Do you like roller coasters, Mary?
No.
No, I have absolutely no interest. Life is scary enough. What the hell are you doing? But
but if I was at the top of the roller coaster, I'd definitely be like, everybody hates me and wants me dead.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you're in sympathetic activation, when your nervous system's in fight or flight, why am I at the top of this roller coaster? What the hell is about to happen? Oh my God. The only thoughts available are the sympathetic thoughts. Right? Whoever put me up here hates me. I'm going to die. This is a nightmare. Your nervous system is dictating the thoughts you can think. If you're in panic, you're not sitting up there being like, this is so lovely. What I'm really enjoying right now is being at the top of this death machine. This is just so dreamy. Hold my hand, Mary. I'm so happy. Right?
Yeah, unless you're an adrenaline junkie, in which case I'm assuming that that roller coaster matches your state.
Exactly. So you'd probably be in ventral vagal, in the safe and social part of the nervous system, because you enjoy it. You're choosing it. You want it. There's volition and choice there, right? So it's not panicking you like it would me, because I don't want to be there. So really, the second half is all about understanding our nervous system. I share tools to map our nervous system, because the way my nervous system reacts and your nervous system reacts isn't one of my wife's best friends, Scott, is a roller coaster head. He like travels the world going on roller coasters. Really sweet guy. I don't get it. But, you know, his nervous system works differently than ours. And so what feels like a little bit of anxiety for me might not register for him, and vice versa. So you need to map your nervous system so you know, what is Mary getting a little anxious feel like? What is Mary getting medium anxious and Mary getting a lot anxious? And so too with dorsal, which is the shutdown, checked out. Wait, what? Sorry, I got checked out part of the nervous system, like that dissociating, disconnecting part. We need to understand that too, because that comes up so much in emotional outsourcing.
Mm-hmm. Where you're kind of passive to the experience around you because that feels the most safe. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah. Or so I explain dorsal as you're like at the full back of the cave. So you've been running from lions and running from lions and running from lions and you're so wiped out. In Spanish, we say, no doy más. I can give no more, because we're very dramatic. And it's just your system has no energy left to give. There's no gas in the tank. So that's dorsal, is when you're just like deer in the headlights, possum playing possum, like, huh? Oh, I can't change. I can't do anything. I'm just overwhelmed. It's the overcome overwhelmed. What I also explain in the book, because I think this is really important, is that most folks living in emotional outsourcing are in this mixed state called functional freeze. Do you know about this?
No, but I carry on, elaborate.
Thank you, my darling. So in this mixed state, we are functional, meaning we're not catatonic. We're not like zombied out on a bed, but we are in freeze. And so we are checked out to our own emotions. We are numb to ourselves. We are numb to a lot of feelings. I'd say generally except the big three, mad, sad, and glad. Not happy, not ecstatic, not furious, not bereft. Mad, sad, glad. Like kind of the vanilla version of feelings. But we're functional. Like we're functional under capitalism. We have a good job. We probably have advanced degrees. We're maybe in the C-suite. Look at how successful I am. I have a family. These children survive all day, right? Like we're doing the things, but we're numb to the experience of it. And that's really the case for a lot of us who grew up with all the aspects of emotional outsourcing, where you had to people please your parents while getting straight A's, while being really productive and functional. And because excellence was expected, you never celebrate yourself. You just keep going to the next thing, keep going to the next thing. And your life is so about everyone else. Your own feelings, forget about it. Forget about it. It's an intense way to live. And I'd say that's how I lived for the first 30 plus years of my life, like deep in that functional freeze.
Yeah, this eldest daughter feels called out.
Oof, eldest immigrant daughter. That's us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like going through the motions in layperson's terms. And I feel like social media kind of puts us in that when it comes to the news cycle, where you feel like you're staying informed, you feel like you are mad, sad, or glad, but you're not, you're like, what your body's doing isn't really matching up to kind of like the mosh pit of thoughts in your brain.
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't thought of the parallel with social media, but that's so astute, right? Because you feel like you're, because you liked a post about something, like you're making change for that thing when, yeah, that's really astute, Mary. Thank you for that.
Which, like, I'm not blaming the user who's going through that. It's just like the way the big tech is set up. Yeah.
It's so true. Yeah. And you know, there's, we kind of have to be in that to some degree to keep living in emotional outsourcing, right? Because it demands that we're not present in the moment. Because as soon as you're present, you can start to see the systems that you're in, both the family system, the interpersonal system, and the sociopolitical system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And once you see that, you can't unsee it.
No, it is.
And then suddenly you're anxious in a whole different way.
Listen, it's true.
Well, can we move from doom and gloom to, oh, I so badly want to find a witty rhyme that's the antidote of doom and gloom, but maybe you could help me, Bea.
Okay, we'll work on it. We'll come back to it.
Doom and gloom, glimmer and glam. I don't know.
Glimmer and shimmer.
Yeah, glimmer and shimmer.
Glimmer and shimmer is kind of great. Well, glimmers, as I'm sure you know, are the opposite of triggers.
Yes, I have recently learned that. So how do we move from the doom and gloom of emotional outsourcing to using our body to establish a sense of safety, self-worth, and feeling really going back to that present state that you so eloquently highlighted?
We need to come back into presence in the body. And we do that in two really important ways. We choose what to feel and we watch for what we habitually feel. So let's start with the second one. To recognize moments when we're outsourcing our sense of safety or worth to others, we watch for tension. So if your chest tightens after you send a text or you rehearse a conversation or an email or something for hours in your head, those can be signs of your body saying, like, my worth feels on the line here. This is beyond the email and it's about my sense of self. So the cue isn't just in the thought, because listen, if you're sending an email at work, it's important to read it twice. But what are you actually putting into it? Like, is your worth, is your belonging, is your safety going into it? Right. And so we're really going to feel for that contraction and that tension. And when you do, you're going to orient your nervous system. So this is one of my favorite tools to teach because it is incredibly simple. It's free, it's accessible, and it's great for humans of all ages. So everyone should teach their kiddos this, teach it at work. It's incredible. And it's one of those nervous system tools that feels so simple. It's like, get out of here. Get out of here with that. That can't work until it does. So orienting your nervous system is about showing your nervous system when you are. So when we're triggered, our nervous system takes us back into the past. Suddenly it's 1986 or it's 1997 or it's 2 years ago when the scary thing or the hard thing or whatever happened. And you're not here and now in this moment. So we simply remind the nervous system, hey, baby, hi, hi, you're here. You're okay, baby, you're here. And we do that by looking around and taking in our surroundings. So you simply, quite literally, look around the space you're in and slowly let your eyes go over each object and take in the present moment. It can be really helpful if your nervous system's starting to freak out or starting to get activated to name 3 to 5 things you can see. So sewing machine, plant, world's best cat, world's best Mary. That was four things. You can also name colors, right? So like blue, orange, green, shapes. There's a rectangle painting, a round light, the square that Mary's in. But what we're doing is moving into the prefrontal cortex, which is the executive function thinky-thinky part of the brain, which brings us out of freak out or out of that checkout and into the here and now. And we're giving it pattern recognition, which the brain loves. Because think about it. If you're being chased by a lion, are you going to stop and count squares? Hopefully not, right? Hopefully not, because then you're going to be lunch. So if you're safe, count things, right? If you want to show your system you're safe, count things. And then I like to have, because remember, I'm always going to combine thought work, mindset work with somatics. I like to have a thought ready that I've practiced and I'm going to use in this orienting moment. So I like to use, I am safe enough. And the enough is really important because, Mary, like you're freaking out and you tell your body, I am safe. What's it going to say? No, you're fucking not. Get the fuck out of here with that bullshit, right? And we don't need that. We need more self-trust, more self-love, not like bafangul, right? So I am safe enough. There's like a sigh on the end of that, right? We do that when we notice the contraction as a way to come back into the present so we can come into choicefulness. And orienting can take 2 seconds, right? So it's quick. You can do it while driving. You can do it. I don't like advice that you have to like go to the top of the mountain to do. Like if you have to go to the ashram, it's not helping the average bear, right? Like it's not going to work. So you can do it while driving. You can do it in a boardroom, in a PTA meeting, while teaching kindergarten, while parenting, while breastfeeding. You can do it anywhere and everywhere. And it's super accessible. So we both do that when we feel contraction. And we actively come into presence with our bodies in moments that are super freaking chill. When we're working to rewrite that procedural memory, if he doesn't like me, I am ruined. If she doesn't like the thing I did, I'm unworthy. When we're looking to rewrite those stories in our nervous system, we don't start by setting a boundary with your boomer mom. Come on. What are you doing, sweet pea? That's not going to work. I highly recommend don't do that, right? I recommend you start asking yourself really banal, really unimportant questions, not to get the answer, but for the experience of asking yourself the question. Do you feel the difference there? It's about showing your nervous system, I matter enough for me to listen to, for me to ask questions of. So in the morning, hey, body, do you want a shower? No? Okay, cool. Hey, body, do you want coffee or tea? Coffee? Okay, cool. Do you want to work out today? Right? And so like each little step of your day, just start checking in with your body. This the way I ask Wade before I just up and pet him, because I have respect for him.
I feel incredibly inspired and also validated because at retreats, when I have a group of women arrive and they're all so nervous, right? They just traveled across the country or world. They're meeting new people. There's like lots going on. And one of the first exercises that I do with them is I call orientation. I actually learned it from my voice coach because it's part of grounding yourself to be able to project your voice. And the technique is to walk around the room and I tell them to touch every part of you with every part of this room. And if you can't do it physically, you do it energetically. So they're walking around and like the whole group, and suddenly you just see all these bodies like somatically really relaxing. They're orienting to their surroundings. So they might see a person pass by them, but it's not in like a comparing, oh my God, I got to say something to make them like me right now because I just arrived to this women's self-love retreat. So we all got to be besties right away. It's like they get this little moment of peace, but it's also in the context of the collective. And the phrase that I love yours, I am safe enough. That is so, so good. And I got chills when you said that because ours at retreats is Ram Dass's Be Here Now. And then I make it into an I am here now. So when you talked about like the temporal, you know, bringing your body to this moment and not 1987, that was like, wow, I've been saying that for all these years. And a girl just texted me yesterday that she got it tattooed on her body with my handwriting.
Whoa.
She just sent me a photo. So I was like, what are the odds that we'd be talking about it now? And I'm just so inspired.
That's amazing. Wow, wow, wow. I remember the first time someone got my work tattooed on them. It's one of the most humbling things in the entire world.
You're like, am I a cult leader?
Listen, there's nothing I'm more careful about.
Well, I tell them, and they joke with me all the time. I actually had a stand-up comedian come to one of my retreats, and she did a whole bit roasting me, and it was amazing. And of course, it was like all the culty white girl at a retreat, self-love retreat, you know, jokes. But yeah, where we draw the line is I'm like, you can't get my face.
Oh, God.
Or like my full name. Somebody does have the Mary's Cup of Tea logo, but their name Sweet. Also starts with an M. So it's okay. Like the M could be for their name also. Yeah, yeah. And that's how they justified it to me.
I think that's really cute. But I like that you have parameters. You're like, listen. Yeah. Yeah.
And I have never like organized tattoos at retreats or asked, just for the record, in case anyone's listening to this and is like, I want to come to a retreat, but I do not want a tattoo. That is not a necessity.
No.
Anyway. Those techniques are absolutely genius. And physically talking to the body. And that's how self-worth starts in the body.
Right. Yeah, it's really important. It's really important because we need the body to know that we trust it and we recognize that these habits are intellectual, intelligent, wicked smart adaptations. And we need to step out of shame by becoming our own best friend through the body, right? Mm. And compassion is the only state where real change can happen and where real change lasts.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we've arrived, Bea. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Mary. This is such a delight.
I'm incredibly grateful for you for doing this part two and showering us with your wisdom about how to end emotional outsourcing, also the title of Bea's book. So go pick it up.
Yeah.
I love that you have a book now because it's, like you said, the accessibility factor. The book just helps so much.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was important to have, you know, my podcast is free. The book is free at your library. I'd be grateful if you picked a copy up, and I have lots of thank you presents on my website.
Ooh, can't wait to visit that. Is that your, well, I'm going to link that in the description.
Okay, great. But it's BeatriceAlbina.com/book.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Bea.
Thank you so much.
If you're enjoying our self-love podcast, please take a moment to leave a comment or a review letting me know what your biggest takeaway was. As somebody who works mostly behind the scenes on this podcast, I love hearing from you, and it just keeps me connected to the purpose, which is always to spread the gift of self-love.